Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for staying with me. Thanks for hanging out with me today. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm glad you're here. Jim Ostroff is with us. I'm glad he's here, too. Jim is associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and Jim's here to talk to us about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world these days. And, Jim, I know that I don't think in the letter we get into it this much today, but we got to really start out talking about oil, don't we?
We certainly do.
I mean, light sweet crude went to $135 a barrel overnight.
I know.
It is. $135. Now, Jim, it hasn't even been a year that it was like in the 50s or 60s, 58
well,
or 60.
And 1 year ago, oil averaged about $65.
So it's doubled. It's more than doubled.
It has more than doubled in a year. And you might say supply and demand is a little better than it was a year ago. And in short,
why is the price high then?
Perfect storm in some ways. There is heightened concern about potential cutoff of supply in Nigeria, and Mexico's production is decreasing because they don't allow any foreign investment. But in addition, the dollar is being pounded, and when oil producers get paid in dollars, and they want a little more. But in addition, there's no other way to be no nice way to say this, but it is speculation. Now, that's why our markets work, and the price is what people say it is. But
this is why Jim, I say that what's going on right now, and let's put some things in perspective,
right,
folks. I think what was it, $88 or $89 a barrel, adjusted for inflation, was the number that we had to get to where we were to be as high as it was back in the '70s.
Actually, March of 81 was the high point.
Okay.
But we've
high
passed
point.
That. We've blown
but
past
that, was,
that.
Adjusted for inflation, it was going to be like $88 or $89 a barrel. So we waved at that, and we flew right over that and waved at it as we went by. So
right.
we've got a whole new record. But this kind of a situation is not the reasons for this kind of a high price for oil is not the same reason that we had in the 70s and the 80s, is it?
It is not, and let me say...
Which in a way is good news.
It is not. It's different because we don't face the potential for a real big cutoff of oil.
Right.
And there's a silver lining. It shows that our economy, our individuals, are much more energy efficient than they were 25 and 30 years ago, and it shows how much more resilient the United States economy is.
Well, a couple of years ago, when we started, the prices started going up, and the economy wasn't really being hurt that much by it. You know, I asked the economist in the Brain Trust. I said, why is this? Why is it that the economy is not reeling from these higher prices? And this was when it wasn't even at 60 yet.
Right.
And they said, well, it's quite simply this. The U.S. requires less oil per dollar of GDP than ever before. Every year we use less and less oil to produce a dollar of output. And so as you say, we're much more efficient with the oil for the production that we make, and even though it's that's cold comfort, Jim, when we put 60, 70, 80, 100 bucks a gallon, a dollar's worth of gas
oil
in our car, cold comfort when you're doing that. But the truth is, the U.S. economy is less dependent upon oil for the production that we have.
That's correct. It is, that is why over here, I got to say, people feel. Let me just say this, that prices are, whatever you say, they are inflated beyond reason and reality. They will retreat, and That means, you know, it is very unlikely that we're looking at a situation where high oil, high pump prices will push the economy south.
I've asked those same economists in recent weeks if they thought we were in a commodities bubble, not just an oil bubble,
right,
but a commodities bubble. And this, folks, remember when NASDAQ was 5,500, that was a bubble. Remember when you know, housing prices went through the roof? Well, it wasn't so much it was a housing bubble, but it was brought on by a credit bubble, basically.
Right.
And of course, those things have collapsed now, and houses in Florida and California and Las Vegas. I was in Vegas a couple of weeks ago, Jim, and houses are selling are valued at half of what they were a year ago.
That's right.
So if I'm convinced, and these economists I've been talking to, that I've been talking to have said that they believe we are in a commodities bubble, not just oil, but also corn. I think corn's in a bubble right now. I think a lot of commodities are.
And
maybe,
many metals.
Maybe not gold. I'm not saying that.
No. But many very important metals and just, you know, take heart. Newton was right. The Newton rule. You can't defy gravity forever.
Yeah.
You can't. And people who say the fundamentals don't matter, just look what they're trying to sell you. It's true.
The price of oil right now is, I mean, I'm no expert on this, but I do believe, Jim, Jim, back when oil was $65 a barrel, my oil experts came on this show and said they believed 20 to 25% of the price of oil was speculation.
It is at least that amount, if not
and that
more.
And that was at $65.
$65.
Now this is double.
Now it's
so
double.
I believe it's more than 20-25%.
And also the fact is that it seemingly produces much higher returns in any asset class right now.
Right.
And people are being sold on the belief, and this is absolutely true, you better get on now. You know, oil prices are only going higher.
Yeah, the greater fool syndrome.
And that is it. And we did something on this a little bit ago and actually charted the substantial run-up of investor money in commodities, oil and metals. And it almost goes up if you're charting like a 45 and then a 60-degree angle.
Right.
This year, it will turn. And you know, when it does, it's going to fall hard.
It will, and there'll be some fallout from this. There'll be some financial disasters for some people, but not for the average American. We're waiting on that fall to happen. 20 after, I'm Jim Blasingame. Jim Ostroff is our guest. We'll be right back. More to come after these messages.
Turn around and see you in a crowded place. What's for the emotions on a God face? Something's happening to me. My friends say I'm acting peculiarly.
Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Jim Ostroff, Associate Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Jim and I were talking about what we consider to be, and what most experts I'm talking to, Jim, and Jim Ostroff is one of them, is a bubble in certain commodities. I really do believe that corn is inflated, and that's hurting prices, which we'll talk about that right in just a few minutes. But the one thing, Jim, you mentioned off the air, you mentioned the tulips. Folks, there's a book that you hear me refer to at least once a week. I refer to this book because every year it seems to become more and more current. Jim, it was Charles McKay's book that he wrote in 1848. The title is "Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds."
That's right.
And it's about the three wacky things that happened in about a 300 or 400 year period. The 1500s, I think it was, the tulipomania, where tulip bulbs were selling in those days for like a couple of $1,000s.
That's right.
And it was ridiculous. It was nothing more than just madness of crowds. And then they had the Mississippi scheme, and then they had the South Sea bubble, which was very similar to what we're talking about. And this is back, Jim, when we didn't have a lot of fast communication around the world.
Right.
And so, you know, it seems like we haven't learned anything after all these years, Jim.
I guess it's just a function of being human. But ultimately it is, and it's just basically people thinking, I can make money, I can make it easy, I can make it quick, and don't worry, I'll be the last one out.
Mm-hmm.
And then prices, values soar beyond reason.
See, there's no difference. There's no difference, Jim, in this kind of mania over commodities than when people were investing in IPOs of websites that didn't even have anything to sell. Back in 99, this was happening.
Right. Well, there is a little, of course, real value in some of the materials over here.
There is some intrinsic value.
There is some, but
the mania is the same.
Absolutely, and no one repealed human nature, and you just see this time and again, and then people look back and say, "How could I have been so silly?" You know, well,
right.
Well,
but
don't
Jim,
do
this,
it again.
This leads us right into the lead from the Kiplinger
right.
letter, and that's the inflationary impact of all of this. Talk to us about that.
Oh yeah, well, you know, the thing. First off, we try to address the public perception is, you know, inflation is spinning out of control right now, isn't it? And, you know, we say no, overall prices probably will be up about 4% this year, which is pretty close to what it was last
mm-hmm.
year. But the thing is, it does.
That number includes food and energy, right?
Yes, it does. It does.
Yeah.
And the point is that it to many people, it is the perception. Like, you know, for many, incomes are really sort of struggling to keep up with inflation because wage growth is about 3%. And, of course, you know, people look at what's happening, particularly with food and energy prices. They comprise more than half of the consumer price index, and they're really driving inflation with, the price at the pump up by this point probably about 25% from last year. So the thing is, if you took out food and energy.
Mm-hmm. What they call core inflation.
That's right. I mean, prices are up a little over 2% from a year ago.
Right.
Or at a 2% annual rate, which is not roaring inflation. Not like we saw, some remember here back in the late 70s to about 80, before Mr. Reagan came in and Mr. Volcker took hold. It's nowhere near that, and very unlikely that we'll see.
Well, even 4% inflation, even though that's too much.
Right.
That's not runaway inflation.
It's
high
not.
Inflation, but it's not
right,
runaway
right,
inflation.
Right. No, it is not. And of course, to some real extent, the reason for that is the Fed's continuing cut of interest rates.
Right.
Which is and is doing what they had hoped. It is helping to spur the economy, and inflation right now is a byproduct, but it is not runaway inflation. And it looks like certainly this, the Fed has paused now and will not increase rates for months mm-hmm. unless something really bad comes along.
Right. Well, and this is the issue, the Fed and it's been interesting to watch the different attitudes of the European Central Bank and central banks and the central banks around the world, especially in Europe.
Right.
And our own central bank, because Europeans have been more focused on inflation, the concern about inflation, because they actually are okay with 1 or 1.5% growth. And so they don't really try to stimulate their economy as much. And it's probably correct for them to do that because inflation is more dangerous for them probably than it is for us. But we've been more concerned about making sure the economy didn't go into a tailspin.
That's right.
And letting inflation kind of run a little bit.
Mm-hmm. No, that exactly right. And as we and I have discussed many times, yes, in most countries in Europe, we see very slow and maybe steady increases in growth and maybe high unemployment. And
they apparently can live with that. But the key is how accommodative you are with the money supply. And we'll talk about this and some other new stuff right after this break. We'll be right back with our good friend Jim Ostroff. Stay with me.
Oh,
sitting on.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am the smart. I am the smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after. Thanks very much for staying with me. Thanks for hanging out with me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. Jim Ostroff is our guest. He's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors and a longtime friend of ours. Jim, we were talking as we went to the break about what the Fed is, how the Fed reacts to the current economic landscape and the difference between our Fed, our central bank, and Europe. And what has happened is it was very interesting to watch the Fed a few months ago when inflation was going up and the economy was going down, and the central banks don't have a lot of tools. They only have a few tools, that can, and basically the main one is the money supply and the interest rates. And so our central bank chose to lower rates in favor of growing the economy,
right,
and letting inflation sort of deal with itself. But now, as you indicated earlier, I think we can expect the Fed to say, okay, the economy's kind of leveled off. We better go fight inflation a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so that's the reason you said a minute ago that don't expect any new cuts in the near future.
Yeah, barring catastrophe here, the Fed has paused, and depending on how things look later this year, next year, could very well begin to raise interest rates because they are concerned about an ignition of inflation.
Right, exactly.
They are.
So, Jim, let's move over and talk about consumers and what some of the things that retailers are doing. Over on page 2, you guys, this is a fascinating story that I've never seen anywhere else, really, Jim, and I'm not surprised that you guys would cover it, Kiplinger would cover this. Tell us what some retailers are doing to try to build their own brands.
Well, I mean, one here, of course, is saying, you know, retailers understand many consumers are sort of price-stressed, are looking for value, and so retailers are ramping up something they have done for many years, and that is go to, you know, private label brands or house brands. And these are goods that many times are manufactured by the same brand companies, you know, that we all know and love and buy. But because there's no advertising and other things, they sell for less. And so there's a tremendous increase here in private label products. Trader Joe's is a great example. Almost everything they sell there is their own house brand. Mm-hmm. And the point on this, though, is not only price, but it has another important value in that if people like it and they find value and they buy it, it also tends to build, you know, brand loyalty. Mm-hmm. And that is very important today out there in retail, where people have been brand unloyal. They've been Benedict Arnold the brands. And of course, private label, you know, lower price, but there are higher profit margins. So, that's why retailers actually for years have been trying to build their own house brands or private label business.
Well, drugstores have been doing it for years with their generic drugs, and grocery stores have done it for years with their brands. Now, typically, though, when you go to the grocery store and you find the store brand groceries, those aren't quite the quality of the brand, of the name brand.
They may be.
But what you're talking about, this phenomenon you're talking about, this strategy you're talking about, as you say, these are oftentimes products that are made on the same line. They came off of parallel lines at the manufacturer. The manufacturer makes one kind of blue jeans for one brand, and then they put your brand on the other side, and it's the same pants.
It is, and you know, and over here, it's the consumers are smart, you know, and they'll look initially here and say, "Yeah, let me try that." There's a good price incentive, and many times they'll find it's the same.
But it seems to only work though, Jim, if the store is trying to promote that brand. It seems to work best when the store that's doing this, the retailer that's doing this, has its own brand, and they're doing it quite a bit, not just dropping their brand in amongst 10 other brands.
Oh, yes, they really do need to go and market it and make consumers aware of it and offer their own incentives,
right.
Discounts, and
this
and
is
other
the power, folks. This is the power of branding. And this is once again, it rears its head. You hear me talking about this all the time. The power of branding. What are you doing in your small business about your brand, your products, your company? What does the public think about you and what you sell? It's very powerful. 20 Tales, stay with us. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and here's little Steely Dan bringing us back. Jim Osterhoff is our guest. He's with the Kiplinger Editors, associate editor there, and we're I always like telling you about their website, Kiplinger.com. That's where you can get a lot of good stuff there. So now a website I've been looking at for many, many years, and of course, when you get there, you can also subscribe to their publications, which I also like telling you about because I think that they're important. And they're also publications I've been reading for longer than I've been going to the website. And that is the Kiplinger Letter, the flagship, the one we've been, the Jim and Joan and I work off of every week, is there. And that's the weekly publication. Then they've got the three, actually now four biweekly editors, right, Jim? The California Letter, the Tax Letter, the Agriculture Letter, and the Alternative. No,
well, it's called, you know, it's a biofuels market alert,
which I'm still encouraging you guys to change the name of that to Alternative Fuels.
They may well do that one day.
Tell them I said to do that and send me the commission for
okay,
the change.
Okay, I shall do that. The regular commission's in the check in the
but
mail.
Anyway, they got the four biweeklies, and you can subscribe to those there at the website. Also, the magazine, Jim, right?
The Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine.
Why don't you go ahead and give us that phone number?
Here is a toll-free number. It's 800-544-0155.
And don't forget to ask them for the 30-day free trial. Jim, let's move over and talk about travel. I've been doing a lot of air travel in the last couple of months.
Right.
I do some just about every month, but in the last couple of months, a lot. And it's really not much fun traveling by air anymore.
No, it's not. And not only long delays, but just unexpected long delays, you know. Because
well, and having to go through the security thing. I mean, I realize we have to do all that. But,
right.
But, you know, yesterday, day before yesterday, I decided not to check my bag. I went on a trip by myself. And I decided not to check my bag because I was only going to be there overnight.
That's right.
And so I walked into the airport forgetting that I couldn't take my deodorant and my shaving cream.
Yeah.
I couldn't check it because they were both over 3 ounces.
Right, that's right.
And so it created a little crisis for me. And, I, Jim, I'm sensitive to all the security that we got to have. But at some point in time, we've got to just say, wait a minute, guys. Don't we need to just live our lives and let the terrorists take their best shot? I mean, I just, at some point in time, I mean, one guy tried to blow up a plane with a shoe bomb 10 years ago, 15 years ago, whenever it was, and ever since then, we've all had to take our shoes off.
Yeah, that's right.
One episode where people tried to blow up planes with some liquids, ever since then, we've all been inconvenienced in how we can carry our own products, our own goods, own stuff on an airplane. And I'm going to say this. I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again, folks. Jim, at some time, folks, I'm not saying this with anything. There's no joke intended. This is serious. Jim, what's going to happen when a woman gets on an airplane with a bra bomb? What happens after that?
That's right. What do we do?
At some point in time, we got to say, you know what? Let's don't be crazy about it. Let's don't get every. The more they do these things, they only have to do them once, apparently, till they create all this chaos for us.
That's right.
And that's what terrorism is, isn't it? Creating chaos.
It is. And you know,
and they're still benefiting from that.
That's right. They are
every day.
And we have hundreds of millions of people who do fly, and it is very tough.
The oil price situation is making it to the point where airlines cannot stay in business with these prices of oil.
No.
And the airline tickets are going up, and it's creating a problem for the industry, isn't it?
Right, it is. And a matter of fact, I believe here even the other day, American Airlines announced they're going to be charging, I believe, $15 to check your first bag.
The first bag, yeah. They're already charging $25 for the second bag, many of them.
Yeah. And
if you check two bags, folks, in most airlines, you're going to pay something for the second bag. And now American is charging for the first one.
First bag.
By the way, yesterday I flew on Delta, and you know the little envelopes that they give you to stick your boarding passes in?
Right.
They don't print those anymore. You don't get any of those. You just stick your ticket in your pocket. They're not doing that. And of course, any food you get on an airplane now, you pay for that food.
Well, you pay for it, or you have to buy it before you get on.
Or you bring out a Whopper from the Burger King when you get on the airplane.
Whatever, something like that. No, I know.
You're schlepping food on and off an airplane.
And soon they're going to ask you, can you please push? We need some help. Save fuel.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
On takeoff. I know. Very challenging, and you were correct. You have to wonder how much longer we can go on like
this. It's an interesting thing that's happening, and if you're actually experiencing it, it's not so much fun. Jim, let's move down quickly and talk about the price of metals.
Right.
It's changing the way we're gonna have our coins. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, actually going back to what we said, their commodities have been soaring, including the price for copper, zinc, and nickel, though nickel has pulled back a bit. And the point here, and this has been known for actually some time, that it costs a lot more to make pennies and nickels than they are worth.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for instance, it costs 1.2 cents to produce every penny, and almost 8 cents to make a nickel.
So we may be going back to steel pennies. Is that what you're thinking?
Like we did in World War II, 1943.
I have some of those steel pennies.
Yeah, I do too. They still have the same color, but they're almost entirely steel.
I wasn't born in those days, folks, but I still have them in my penny collection.
Yep.
Stand by. Quick break, tin tail. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 7 till. A little bit of ZZ Top bringing us back there. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Jim Mostroff is our guest, Associate Editor with the Kiprigo Editors. Joan, bottom of page 3, we got some news about the polar bears. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, the thing is, there have been many years of back and forth over here about whether polar bears in Alaska should be, are threatened and should be protected. Polar bear populations have not plunged, but the Bush administration decided that they should be put on the endangered species.
They finally just gave up, right? I mean, they just gave in.
They did. And
folks, let me tell you something. The polar bears, I've seen reports that say that the polar bear population is not diminishing.
No.
It's actually thriving, Jim.
That's right.
This is a political situation, isn't it?
Well, it is, and, you know, the Republicans hear a lot of flack saying, you don't care about the environment, and you're out to kill the species, and all you want to do is drill in Alaska. And so I heard somebody
the other day say, a friend of mine, said that George Bush just wants to drill oil in the tundra.
Right.
And the way she said it was as if he was going to go up there, where the oil companies were going to go up to Anwar, the Alaska National Preserve.
Wildlife Preserve, right.
Yeah, Anwar. That they were going to go up there and they were going to rape the entire, millions and millions of square miles of tundra.
Right.
And but the truth is, Anwar, where they want to drill is 2,000 square miles, And Anwar is 380 something thousand square miles.
That's right.
Now that's the difference between where they want to drill and the overall size of this thing. And this is an example of something that's getting blown way out of proportion by hysterical people. And nobody wants the polar bears to thrive more than I do. But this is a political thing, ladies and gentlemen, that's happened right now.
No, it is, and basically it's making a point, you know. And if we can do this, I put it this way, expect more lawsuits. Yep. This is a tool to do other things.
Exactly.
And
buckle your seatbelts, gird your loins,
more to
come. Jim, let's move over and talk about the election. Hillary just won't give up.
No, and now...
And I don't blame her. I don't blame her. I'm proud of her.
She's talking about taking this to the convention, even.
I hope she does.
You sound like John McCain on Saturday Night Live. I urge you to continue fighting. But now she won't over here. At least that's what she's saying now. I don't know after the final worthless
Jim, she's
primary.
Got an argument. If you look at the states she's won and that he is lost, and you look at and you look at Obama's position against McCain in those key states,
right,
she's a better candidate than he is in the states that you must win if you're going to win the election.
Well, that's her position, and
he's won more, but he's won in states that the Democrats already have, the blue states.
That's right. Now, of course, no one knows if there was a good vice presidential pick, if that would change the equilibrium over here, if it would change the calculus, but. This looks like it's going on for a while longer, unless there are, you know, people within the Democratic Party that strong-arm the Clintons that have enough gumption to do that and say, get out.
Those people exist. And if I were her, I wouldn't. I mean, I'm serious. I'm not a Hillary backer, but I really am proud of her. I mean, I'm serious as I can be. I'm really proud of how hard she's fought. And I'll be honest with you, that tells me what kind of a leader she'd be.
And I got to say, that to an extent is very important.
I'm impressed with her toughness.
As opposed to someone who just keeps looking and saying, well, okay, I'll do this. No, forget that. I give up. Okay. So.
Well, the other thing is, let's move quickly. We got less than a minute. Jim, the Republican Congress. The Republican situation in Congress is looking more and more dire every day, isn't it?
Well, it is, and, you know, it really looks, certainly in the House that the Democrats will pick up seats, but in the Senate, the key Senate, right now it's 51-49 Democrats, and they're still, it is possible that the Democrats will have a 60 or 61 vote majority after the November election.
It's getting closer than it's ever been. It's been in a long time.
Right.
And that's a frightening scenario to me, Jim.
Well, if you have a veto-proof situation, even if there's a Democratic president, it just is a concern to some if you have a situation where both houses, no question, can override a president's veto.
Yep. We have the potential for some scary times. We'll keep reporting on this. Hey, Jim, thanks for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thank you all.
We'll see you next time. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and as you know, this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.